Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Let's talk draft with Robert Turbin, former Seahawk, current NFL analyst. He joins us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Turbo, how's it going?
Hey, what's going on, guys? I'm doing good. I'm here in Cleveland, of all places, checking out the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, getting some music history in my life.
Nice, and nice.
Yeah, doing the touristy stuff. Yeah. How we doing on your end?
Good. Sometimes the touristy stuff is fun. Even when it's your hometown, right? Like, I do touristy stuff in Seattle sometimes and think, you know what? I should do this more often. I'm going to ask you first about the newest Seahawk, Byron Murphy. What'd you make about taking a defensive lineman at 16?
I like it a lot. He's got two guys that he can learn from and play alongside, and Jaron Reed and Jonathan Hankins, who was signed this offseason. You know, both guys who have had a good amount of success over the course of their career so far. And, you know, you add to the middle of the defense, and I think it's a nice upgrade. Seattle really could have went anywhere with this pick, Stacy. And so, you know, the fact that they chose to beef up the middle of the defense is not a bad choice at all.
Turbo.
What's up, my guy?
What's going on, man?
What's up,
what are you doing in Cleveland? You just decided to go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Like, how did that come about?
Well, a friend of mine is doing a show tonight, the Bee Simone. She's doing a stand-up comedy show, so I'm coming out here to support her. And in the meantime, you know, I played for Cleveland for a very short time. And when I played here, I got a chance to see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but only the first floor. And I've always wanted to come back since then. That was 2015. And so it sort of just worked out with my plans. I came from Detroit yesterday after the draft. I'm here having a good time.
All right. I see you. All right, let's get back to some football, man. We saw a lot of offensive players get taken early. What, 14 in a row before we saw Leiatu Latu get taken? Does that say anything to you about the NFL, or is it more about what the teams needed at that moment?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, obviously the NFL is, and these teams are continuing to transition into trying to put together these high-powered offenses alongside, you know, being able to, you know, protect their quarterbacks, because these defensive players are, you know, becoming more and more athletic. You know, as the years continue to go on, you know, Chop Robinson is a guy out of Penn State, a defensive end, ran a 4.4 for crying out loud. And so you've got to be able to have athletic bigs that can defend against it. But it is also, you know, team needs. You know, teams this year needed a lot more offensive power. They're trying to keep up with the Joneses, per se, the Kansas City Chiefs of the world, the Bengals of the world when they're healthy. And you got to have some playmakers to be able to put up a lot of points. And so I think it's a balance of both.
When you look ahead to kind of what you'd like to see Seattle do over the next 2 days, is there a particular position or a move or anything that stands out to you?
I think they should stay on the offense. Or, you know, they drafted a defensive lineman, so I think they should stay along those lines, probably get a guy now on the offensive side of the football, middle of the offensive line, a guard, a center maybe, to be able to beef up and add more depth to that position. And really, you know, aside from that, that's really the only real need I see. Maybe get a young linebacker to come in and play behind some of the guys who just signed this offseason. Those are the two positions I would go next.
Yeah, I feel you, Turbo. It's been this draft, right, with the runs that we saw at quarterback, we were assuming it could go down, but to actually watch it go down was fun to watch. When you look at all the quarterbacks that were taken, the situations that they're in, which quarterback do you feel like we can expect to produce at a high level next year, or this season, excuse me?
You know what? As much as I was not, you know, I wasn't the biggest fan of J.J. McCarthy coming out of college. I just didn't really see, you know, he just wasn't really a playmaker at Michigan. We know he won games. He played in a really good system, things of that nature. But the fact that he went to Minnesota, Bump, and he gets to play with Kevin O'Connell, who you know, you talk to guys around the league who play for Kevin O'Connell or been coached by him. He's a really, really great offensive mind, a really, really good quarterback developer. And so I felt like any quarterback who ended up in that system probably going to do really well. So I choose J.J. McCarthy to answer your question just because he was drafted by the Minnesota Vikings.
The big surprise of the night was Michael Penix going at number 8 to Atlanta, a team that desperately needed an edge rusher. Instead, they get their quarterback of the future, even though they just signed Kirk Cousins. What did you make of the move?
Yeah, that was a shocker. I'm not going to lie about that. I think it shocked everybody. Totally unexpected, safe. I didn't think that Atlanta would go quarterback, especially at that spot. And then even if they did, you know, I didn't think it'd be Michael Penix Jr. And so, you know, the fact that they made that move, I think, it shocked everybody. But if you think about it, you know, they're sort of taking that course, you know, that the Green Bay Packers have done in the past and other teams as far as having a quarterback, let him sit, let him learn, and when he's ready, he can play.
Turbo, when you were drafted in 2012, I believe, was the year you were drafted, we saw Trent Richardson go at number 3 at running back. We know how that all went down. We saw
right.
Doug Martin and then David Wilson finish out the first round. No running backs taken in the first round. Do you think that those days are over, or do you feel like it's just a result of the talent that was out there this year? Where do you see the running back position going? Last year you did have a number 8 pick, I think, of Bijan Robinson at the running back spot. Just how do you feel about the running backs and where they're being drafted?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, but last year you had Bijan Robinson in the first round, Jahmyr Gibbs to the Detroit Lions. I don't think that running backs in the first round are going extinct. I think it was just a microcosm and a result of the talent of this year. Not to knock any of the guys. Jonathan Brooks is an excellent talent. Trey Benson out of Florida State is an excellent talent. And, you know, they'll get drafted in the second and third rounds. But it was more so, you know, teams needed other positions, particularly on the offensive line. Obviously, quarterback was a hot commodity this season. But from a talent standpoint, you know, Jonathan Brooks was probably the only first-round talent, but there weren't any first-round needs maybe outside of the Dallas Cowboys, and we see what they decided to do trading out of their pick. So I think it's just this class, but I don't think this is something that we'll see repeatedly going forward.
Hey, I know that we're stepping outside of what Seattle needs right now, but looking at Caleb Williams going to Chicago at number 1, feels like he's going there with some nice weapons, and then obviously Roma Dunze ends up going there at number 9. It's hard for me not to pay attention to what other NFC teams do in the draft, and I'm kind of looking at Chicago. Do you buy that they really, really helped themselves this year, or do you think they could still be a few years away?
No, I think they really did because they've got some really good veterans on their football team on both sides of the football, offensively and defensively. You know, the big question mark for me as it pertains to the Bears is not Caleb Williams. It's more Shane Waldron, who we have some familiarity with, obviously, over the last 3 seasons,
yeah.
Him being the offensive coordinator for the Seahawks. You know, listen, I don't want to be the guy to, you know, talk bad or talk down about anybody, but, you know, we've seen, you know, I saw Jackson Smith and Jigba on a podcast or whatever platform that was, you know, who just was trying to find the kindest words to describe his experience.
Trying his hardest.
With Shane Waldron. Yeah, you know, and you know, DK and other guys that I've spoken to just about their relationship with him and how he conducted the offense. And so, you know, to Shane's credit, you know, he did some good things, and he's still a very young coach. You know, those 3 years are the first 3 years in the history of his offensive coordinating career. So perhaps he's learned from that experience, and he'll be able to take on a new situation, you know, I guess with a different and more evolved approach. But it's still a concern for me as it pertains to, you know, he still has to prove that he can develop a new offense and develop a young quarterback.
Turbo, we just heard from Murphy, and he says he got a couple hours of sleep. What was it like when you got drafted? How much sleep did you get that night?
I don't think I slept at all, man. I don't think I slept at all. It's one of those things that before the draft, you can't sleep. It's like the night before Christmas. And then after the draft, you can't sleep because you're so excited, you know, to get out there and be a part of the team. And you're celebrating with your friends and family. You know, it's like after Christmas. When you open all your presents, now you're just up all day, all night, you know, playing with your new toys or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, it's an exciting time, you know, for guys. I didn't sleep at all that night before the draft and after Seattle picked me. I spent that whole day pretty much celebrating. So it's an exciting time for these guys.
Hey, I'm looking at the offensive line for Seattle thinking, God, they desperately need some help there. How are you feeling about this unit as a whole combined with kind of the run game for what Seattle can do? Do you really like what they've got to work with, or do you see them as needing some pieces?
No, I still think that they need to draft in the interior offensive line as they continue to go along. But, you know, I think so far they still have some, you know, some really good talent there in the offensive line. They just signed Lakin Tomlinson, who's who's been a proven starter in this league, and I think that really helps to the depth of of the offensive line, and they'll continue to add to that. So we know about our tackles, all right, Cross, and obviously Abe Lucas, two guys who've been able to prove themselves. You know, Anthony Bradford is there in the middle. Still have some proving to do, in my opinion. Olu is still developing as a young center. So, you know, you get some guys in here to compete so they can battle out and let the best man win.
Hey, Turbo, who is the obviously we got Murphy. He's going to play the one, even the three. Who's the toughest one or three tech that you remember playing against?
The toughest one or three tech that I remember playing against. Boy, that's a good question. On my own team? Because I would go ahead and try if you're talking about us.
Hey, you talk about your team, opponent, whoever, and why.
Yeah, you know, I think Aaron Donald easily was one of the toughest guys because he could line up anywhere. You know, it's like he could be a one technique, he could be a three technique. All of a sudden, he's on the outside playing the five or even playing the seven to come off the edge. But he was so versatile. He was hard to defend. He was one of the tougher players, definitely, that I remember playing against in that area.
All right. He is NFL analyst Robert Turbin. He, like many of us, will be watching day two of the NFL draft and day three to see what the Seahawks do here. We appreciate your insight on the pick they've already made. Thanks, Turbo. Have a good weekend.
Thanks,
have fun
Turbo.
In Cleveland.
I will. Thank you. You too. Peace.
Bye, Turbo. Someone said, is Turbo loading luggage onto a plane? He's at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Turbo be doing things.
It's so funny.
Turbo be doing things.
And every time it's him doing NFL analysis, but it'll be like, hey, I'm here at the Georgia Aquarium swimming with sharks. And I would just like to say, Byron Murphy, really great pick for the Seattle Seahawks.
Hey, about to go skydiving real quick.
While he's skydiving. Great question, Bump. Falling through the air. We're going to take a look around the NFL coming up a little bit, including a tweak to the NFL schedule that could be in the works. Right now, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Falcons stunned everyone last night by taking Michael Penix to pick number eight. James Palmer, NFL reporter, says that the Seahawks, Raiders, and Saints were all trying to get into the top 10 to take Penix. What's the real headline?
Yeah, was that report coming from an Atlanta area code? Because that's the only thing that makes sense to me. I do not think, and obviously I could be wrong. I know I could be wrong. I would be shocked if the report that the Seahawks were trying to trade into the top 10 for Michael Penix were true.
You would be shocked?
I would be shocked.
I don't think I'd be shocked.
What are they trading?
I don't know. I just wouldn't be shocked. Why not? Why not explore it? Are you 100% that Geno and Sam Howell are going to be your guys for 5 to 10 years? Nah. So why not explore? How serious they were, that's a different question. But I could see them entertaining it. I see this move of Michael Penix. It's like if you walk into my garage, Stacey, I have my gym, and then I have just some cabinets of disaster-type stuff. If the electricity goes out, if we don't have any food, We got all that stuff ready. You know, we're ready for
it. The quake.
This is what Atlanta did. They say, look, man, it might go down in 2 years. It might go down in a year, and Kirk Cousins is not going to be our guy. Let's make sure we are ready to go. But when you look at all the other needs that this football team has, that's what makes you question that pick. And you look at, you just guaranteed Kirk Cousins $100 million. Guaranteed he's getting there. If you you cut him after the first year, I believe the dead cap hit is like $40 million. So you got to wait until 2015 if you really want to cut him. So you're at least investing a year into Kirk Cousins. But they're preparing for a disaster. They're preparing for the worst with Michael Penix. Happy for him. I'm glad he went top 10. He deserved to go top 10. Just an interesting situation. I imagine them showing up to the facility just looking at each other like, what's about to go down?
I thought Mina Kimes' take on it from this morning was interesting.
If you think you're going to be good, which is why you pay Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed, you're doing your team a disservice by not making your team better so that you can compete now. Offensively, they're set. Defensively, they haven't had a solid pass rushing option since, frankly, John Abraham. They finished 32nd in ESPN's pass rush win rate last year. In this draft, you have an opportunity to either take the best edge rusher available or trade down and take multiple shots on goal. They did neither of those things.
To Mina's point, this was not a strange pick because Michael Penix isn't a great player. Michael Penix Jr. is one of the best pure passers in this class. He is going to be throwing passes at training camp for the Falcons that create an early quarterback controversy because Kirk Cousins is coming off an Achilles. Like, there is going to be a crowd of people in Atlanta going, wait, this is the first time I'm seeing this guy throw in person. Whoa, I wasn't prepared for this. That's real. But it's, did Michael Penix make sense as a choice for Atlanta? And I think it's fair to say the answer was no. This was a team that got Kirk Cousins, to Mina's point, because they wanted to win now. What helps them win now in the immediate future is an edge rusher, not a quarterback who's going to develop over the next 2 years.
Like, what happened between signing Kirk Cousins and the draft that made them think, look, we got to roll with a quarterback, specifically Michael Penix. It could be Kirk Cousins not getting his health back the way that they expected him to. It could be a lot of things, but either way, you said it. Once they line up in training camp and everyone sees Michael Penix toss that thing 65 yards down the field on a dot, they're going to be looking at Kirk Cousins like, your days are numbered. They invested in Michael Penix for a reason, not to sit forever. And then this is the NFL, man. It's a circle of life. Eventually, you phase out. You just didn't expect them to get a quarterback after guaranteeing this man $100 million.
Apparently, there's a report that the Falcons called Kirk Cousins when they were on the clock to let him know, which is nice to let him know. But why not let him know earlier?
Yeah.
Because
way before.
If you are willing in any way to take a quarterback in the top 10, this isn't something that dawned on you. Like, it's not like randomly during the draft you were like, wait, you guys, let's take Michael Penix.
You know what we
should
do?
Call Kirk.
Let's get crazy.
Call Kirk and let him know. You have known for a while that this was something you were willing to do.
You knew for a minute. And
call
apparently
Kirk ahead of time.
Apparently I said 2015 cut him. I meant 2025, excuse me. But yeah, the way this went down, it seemed a bit rushed. Like they just figured out they wanted to do this within the last day or two.
Yeah, someone said, well, Seattle wasted a pick on Russell Wilson when they had just signed Matt Flynn to a long-term contract. Exactly, but Seattle didn't have as many defensive questions as Atlanta has right now.
And they didn't guarantee him $100 million.
Yeah, it's a slightly different situation. You can never... There's always a chance that you find your franchise quarterback, and nothing in sports is more valuable than that. And I understand that, but it is a weird choice.
Kirk Cousins' resume is a lot different than Flynn. Flynn had one good year at Green Bay.
Kirk was going to be MVP before he tore his Achilles.
Yeah, he was on the move.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, the Mariners won their third straight series yesterday. 4-3 win over the Texas Rangers. What's the real headline?
We're so back.
Yeah, this is good. You went to Arlington and did something you haven't done in a long time, which is win one game. Then you end up walking away with the series win. You got Ty France, who hits his first bomb of the year. So does Julio. You're seeing some things that were left out there to be seen. We wanted to see Julio send one yard. They're putting it all together. Continue to get quality starts. Continue to get contributions from places you don't really expect it at times. That's what good teams do. Again, I'm going to enjoy this. But now take care of Arizona. but I'm happy. I'm pleased where the Mariners are right now. They've come a long way in such a short time. Let's see if they can keep things going.
J.P. Crawford was placed on the 10-day IL with a grade 1 oblique strain. This was on Thursday before the game. The Mariners start a big 6-game homestand tonight, starting with 3 against the Diamondbacks and then 3 against the Braves. Ooh, tough stretch here. Does Gino get a standing O?
It's his first game back.
Yeah.
No Paul Sewald, though, this series. He's still on the
IL. I think so.
Gino gets love, man.
I'm going to turn back to the text line because I love responding to takes from the 206. Horrible takes all across the NFL and sports radio. No guarantee an edge rusher is going to work out. Half the people we draft come up with a torn pec or crash their ATV. Oh, God, that was one person. No guarantees
in
any of those.
It's half of them.
It was incredibly smart for Atlanta as far as I'm concerned. Great, that's your opinion. That's wonderful. Fantastic. Yeah. I think that this defense, Mina Kimes, as she pointed out, talked about Atlanta being the worst teams in pass rush win rate. They were 32. There are 32 NFL teams. That is last place. There was an edge rusher available that they could have taken. And in this draft, they could have traded back, added another pick, gotten an edge rusher. It is not a bad thing to have a quarterback you really believe in on your roster. It was just an interesting, strange pick for this team in particular.
You do what you...
We disagree, bro.
You do what you do. You want to get a quarterback, you go get a quarterback. This makes sense. Look at this. Caleb Williams, the Bears need a quarterback. Jaden Daniels, Commanders need a quarterback. Drake. New England needs a quarterback. Arizona Cardinals, they need a receiver. The Chargers, they need a lineman. You got the New York Football Giants, no receivers over there. Go get you one. You get all the way down to the Atlanta Falcons. And when you say Atlanta Falcons, your first thought isn't they need a quarterback. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it has you scratching your head a little bit, because when you have a top 10 pick, you go for something that you need right now, not something that you're going to need in the future. I understand what they're doing. They're stashing away acorns for the winter.
Of course. I want Michael Penix to work out. Here's the thing. I would love for Michael Penix in year one to start and be amazing and for the Falcons to look like geniuses, but there would still be that thing of, well, then why did you pay Kirk Cousins so much money? Like, no matter what, they kind of take an L. You know what I mean?
What about
if you start Penix and he looks great, then you're way overpaying your veteran quarterback. And if you start your veteran and Penix sits for 2 years, then what if your team's offense is great with Kirk Cousins, but your defense is holding you back?
I don't think this is going to happen, but look at this scenario, 206. What if Atlanta picked up Mike Penix just to trade him later and acquire more picks?
Well, would you? How many picks would you be willing to get?
I don't think you can trade draft picks so soon like that.
You also,
it's not NBA. No. Oh, you have to do it during... I get you.
Also would be, are you getting what amounts to a top 10 pick, which is what you used on him? Otherwise, you're just trying to recoup as many losses as you can. Again, I think Michael Penix is a good quarterback, and I want him to succeed.
He will.
I really hope he will. I would love for that. I would love for him to just ball out in Atlanta. But it's just a weird decision for Atlanta.
Yeah.
Headline rewrites.
Last headline, Kraken announced on Thursday they are moving their games from Root Sports to King 5 and Amazon Prime starting next season. What's the real headline?
Actually allowing your fans a chance to watch your product? What a novel concept.
Easy access. Go ahead and watch the Kraken. You gotta find a way to get people back on board. I think the Kraken are supportive, but obviously after the year that you had this year, you're going to lose some fans, especially when it's so tough to watch these games. So good move by the Kraken. Make it easier to watch your games. Hopefully you make some moves. There's rumors that the guy from Coachella Valley might come up and be the head coach there, bring some prospects with him. Whatever it is, change is good at this point. I'm glad they will be seen more easily.
So the Kraken will air locally on King and Kong, which is Channel 6, for fans in Washington, Oregon. In Alaska, you can also stream games on Amazon Prime at no additional charge if you have an existing account. We did get a question earlier on the Mac and Jack's text line saying, okay, but what if I'm a Kraken fan, but I'm not local enough to have this channel? If you have Amazon or Amazon Prime, then you're set. You can watch those there. Coming up, taking a look around the NFL, Roger Goodell would like to tweak the schedule even further. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Ross.
What do the Seahawks still need to do in the draft? We're going to talk about that in 15 minutes. Before we get to it, let's talk about the NFL. Commissioner Roger Goodell would like to tweak the NFL schedule even further, and that is in addition to already a 17-game schedule and obviously just three preseason games. Take a listen. This was on the Pat McAfee Show.
I think we're good at 17 now, but listen, we're looking at how we continue. I'm not a fan of the preseason. I don't think we need three.
Waste of time, right? And energy.
I don't buy it, and I don't think these guys like it either.
Well, they have to spend full price for the tickets for those games.
No, they're actually discounted now. So
thank you for doing that.
We got
thank
that
you,
done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our commitment.
That's our commitment.
Thank you, commitment.
But the reality is, I think I'd rather replace a preseason game with a regular season any day. That's just picking quality, right? So if we got to 18-2, that's not an unreasonable thing. The other thing it does, which I thought you were going to, is that ends up on President's Day weekend, which is a three-day weekend, which makes the Sunday night, and then you have Monday off. So that's...
Wow.
Now we're cooking.
Some people have Monday off. That would have made the Super Bowl fall on the weekend of February 17th this past year.
It makes sense when he lays it all out like that. Where it doesn't make sense is for guys like me trying to make a football team, to where I needed all four of my preseason games back in my day to convince the Seattle Seahawks to take a chance on your boy. So it's all about evaluation. There are some guys that don't need the preseason, and they're going to be the starters, and they're going to be ready to go. But there are a lot of guys trying to make the team or make the ball club that need the preseason game. So business-wise, it makes sense when it comes to these undrafted, underrated dudes trying to make an impact. It makes it tougher for them. But, I guess as long as the UFL can hang around and you can use that spring league as kind of a development type thing, I'm okay with the 18 regular season games. I mean, obviously, I'd love to see more football. I just think about the guy trying to make the team makes it tougher for him.
I think that's a very natural thing to think about. And I think that if you're a coach, that's what you're thinking about. Like, if I'm a head coach, if I'm a scout, if I'm a coordinator, if I'm a GM, what I'm thinking about is, yeah, I get it. A regular season game for a fan, infinitely more fun, infinitely more important. A longer football season for a fan is great. A three-day weekend on Super Bowl weekend, phenomenal.
Awesome.
I co-sign. Ideal. Yeah, co-sign. I'm very okay with that. But where do I get my analysis in? Where do I take stock of my team? I no longer have four games in the first place to make sense of it. Now I might not have three. I just wonder if you're going to have great players slip through the cracks. How does that change your evaluation process?
You definitely are going to have players slip through the cracks because an NFL practice ain't what it used to be. Even when I played, it's different now. You can only be out there for so long. You're not tackling. End of the day, you got to see if a player can excel when ish gets real, when it's live and you are tackling and no one cares about your well-being. That's where you get true evaluation. I think on the outside, it might be easier to evaluate receivers and DBs, but once you get inside that box, man, can that one tech handle a double team? Can this linebacker step up and fill the gap? There are things that are going to be missed because of the way that teams practice these days. If you give less opportunities to evaluate when it's live, you're definitely going to have some guys fall through the cracks.
Do you think there should be expanded rosters then with that additional game, with one less preseason game, with questions about depth and whether you're making some of the right choices with those bubble players?
Yeah, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Give guys more opportunities. 54, 55.
Yep. Even if it's just two additional guys on your roster and then carrying two additional guys onto game day rosters, which I think is, 48 or something. Making it to where you can just have one or two additional guys, I think is fair.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's more than fair. C.J. Stroud was pretty bummed that the Houston Texans didn't get the player he was hoping.
With a 31st pick, the Niners select.
Wow. Your guy.
Holy pop was going to get it. Hey, shout out to Bruce.
That was the first reaction I've seen you do that.
Damn. I'm happy for him now because he want to go in the first round and get some more money. I talked to him a couple times, man. Congrats, bro. That's big time. Bro, he's elite.
That was wide receiver Ricky Pearsall, who is not going to be with the Houston Texans, where C.J. Stroud was hoping he'd land. Instead, he is going to the San Francisco 49ers. When I saw this pick, I wondered what it meant for either Debo or Brandon Ayuk.
Well, the rumors I'm hearing about Debo and Brandon Ayuk is that eventually, they're going to trade Debo. I think that's more likely that they sign Brandon Ayuk and you trade Debo. So you might be preparing for the future there. But man, back to Ricky. That's what we should be talking about. This dude has one of the greatest in-game catches I've ever seen in my life. Just Google his name. That highlight is gonna pop up. He's a route runner. He has a great feel for space, great feel for leverage out there. This is a sneaky pick, man. Watch this young man. He's going to go to work next year.
I don't love the idea of Kyle Shanahan getting a really fun offensive weapon. I got to be totally honest with you. I'm not here for it. I don't want to co-sign that. Moving on, Adam Schefter reports the Chargers received trade requests from the Patriots and Vikings for Justin Herbert in the lead up to the draft, but were obviously ultimately turned down. Asking for Justin Herbert is bold. I want to know what they were willing. I want to know what they were offering the Chargers in exchange for Justin Herbert. And I hope it was like, we'll give you pick three.
Give you everything.
Yeah.
I mean, you know that wasn't going to go down. I heard that rumor as well.
You Why would stop have to there? Give Call the Jets and everything. Ask for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
Get bold. Get real bold.
You would have to be extremely bold. You have to give up dang near everything and start all over and just have Justin Herbert in the locker room by himself starting from ground zero. Yeah, didn't see that happening. Not at all.
Yeah, that wasn't going to happen. Next up, Mel Kiper's biggest surprise of the first round wasn't Atlanta taking UW quarterback Michael Penix, but rather the Giants passing on J.J. McCarthy.
I heard for the last couple months the Giants were looking at a quarterback, and they're sitting at six. They could trade up to get J.J. McCarthy. I said, well, you're going to forget about Daniel Jones? You're going to hang him out to dry? You're not going to take an explosive receiver when you haven't had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2018? You have no explosive plays, and you got Malik Neighbors and Romo Dunze sitting there, you're going to take a quarterback. I kept hearing, yeah, they're interested in a quarterback. And they didn't have to move up. They sat at six, and there's J.J. McCarthy. So I'm thinking, okay, what have we been hearing? What's the chatter been for a couple months? They didn't take McCarthy, Scott. They took the receiver Malik Neighbors to help Daniel Jones, who they inherited. Most times, GMs and head coaches want their own guy. And Daniel Jones is coming off injuries. And he had some struggles because the offensive line was bad and they didn't have explosive receivers. So I think the Giants may have, I think, surprised some people. I'm happy they did what they did because I like Daniel Jones. So for all the Daniel Jones haters, the heir apparent wasn't taken at number six.
J.J. McCarthy ends up being the fifth quarterback off the board, surprisingly, after Michael Penix. And that was surprising to me, Bump, because it seemed like it was the top three.
Yeah.
J.J. could sneak in there. And we saw J.J. mocked as high as two. But top three, J.J., gap. Penix and Bo.
Right. That just tells you just how bogus some of these claims are. But Mel Kiper saying that they inherited Daniel Jones, the GM and the head coach over there. They also paid him, re-upped him and said, yeah, we inherited you, but we believe in you. So don't make excuses for him. And I'm not a Daniel Jones hater. I just don't think that he's worth the check that he's getting, but good for him. I think it's natural to assume that they were going to go with a quarterback because Daniel Jones just hadn't shown that he can play consistently. But that didn't happen. But what they did do is equip Daniel Jones with another weapon. So if you inherited him, you invested in him, you just invested a bit more by giving him a weapon. If he cannot make things happen with Neighbors over there, then I think next year is going to be the same situation. Are the Giants going to draft a quarterback?
All right, some very concerning news coming out of Chicago. Curious to know what you and Curtis think about this. First overall pick, Caleb Williams. He's going to wear number 18.
Ugh.
Mm.
Only Peyton Manning can pull that number.
That's a tough number for a quarterback.
You know what? I wore 18 in the CFL and I hated it. That is a difficult one.
That's a number one pick.
18 is not an attractive number.
I mean, I also only think of Peyton Manning.
He's the only guy that could pull it off.
No one else should be. Not even like, in honor of Peyton. I mean, the number itself.
It's not a very attractive number.
I think a great number would be 7. Would be
when you get into the high teens as a quarterback,
3, 5,
it's getting ugly.
1, 10.
Who's wearing 13 over there in Chicago?
Is it Keenan Allen? Because he wore 13 in LA.
I think it is.
Has
to be,
you're
right?
Gonna have to give me that, Keenan.
Nah,
for a hefty sum.
Keenan Allen's put a lot.
He's put a lot of miles on it. Yeah. I get it, but
over 10,000 yards.
I mean, you pay me. If you pay me for every yard and every touchdown I've had, I could be bought for that jersey. But I've never been an athlete with like a jersey. I was a high school athlete, but not with jerseys. So I don't understand the connection to it in the same way. All right. What did the Seahawks still need to do in the NFL draft? Day 2 starts today at 4 p.m. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
We're going to learn a bit more about Byron Murphy II with Texas Insider for 24/7 Horns, Chip Brown. He joins us coming up in 15 minutes. Before we get to that, though, let's stick with the Seahawks. We know who they did choose, which is a defensive lineman bolstering that run defense in round one. What do they need to do now, Bump?
They need to protect Geno and find a nickel. On the offensive line, you need a nickel, not five pennies. My old coach back in Washington State told me that. Coach Yarno, rest in peace. I think you need to solidify the other side. It's all about the guys in the trenches. They are what make things go. They allow linebackers to play freely. They allow DBs to be sticky on the back end when you're playing man defense because you know that your defensive line is getting after you. Offensively, they allow the quarterback to have a comfortable pocket. They allow you to throw the football and create run lanes for your running backs. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for them to address the trenches. Even if they go defense again, I don't think they're going to do it. But even if they go defense again, I'm all about the big boys, man. You got to have depth. But I'm looking at offensive line and saying, all right, let's go get it. Because right now, Lincoln Tomlinson, I believe, is the only left guard or right guard that you have on your roster right now. I just don't want to keep experimenting. I want five dudes. I want a nickel out there every Sunday.
I am 1,000% with you, and it makes me wonder if what they need to do in the NFL draft is trade up. They don't have a second-round pick right now. They traded their second-rounder to the New York Giants as part of a midseason deal for Leonard Williams. We're all okay with that. Leonard Williams was one of your better, more solid defenders in the second half of the season when he was with you. You give him an extension and keep him here to make that second-round pick worth it. It's kind of like you just used your second-round pick on Leonard Williams. Now you have a third-rounder. You're on the board at pick number 81. We're going to start with 33. You're at pick number 81. Now, what's cool for Seahawks fans is Tyler Lockett's expected to be there to announce that pick, so that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But ideally, that pick is higher than 81. Would you make a move up?
Would I make a move up?
Now, forget like what you have to give up. Forget that it's a player. Just like, would your gut tell you, I think to get the player that I think they need, they'll need to choose sooner than 81?
Well, that's a tough one because now I have to look at all the guys that are available and I have to make an assumption on what I think they need. I think they need offensive line, but I also think that the best offensive linemen are already gone. No. So I just talked myself into it. No, you don't have to move up.
You sit tight
and you grab. I just don't want you to give up anything on the back end because where you make your money, man. That's where you find Reek Woolen. That's where you find, was Doug Baldwin a free agent? He was a free agent. Free agent. Mm-hmm. So, and if you look at the statistics, there's a lot more success stories on the back end of the draft than on the front end of the draft. Obviously, these guys are the more talented on the front end, at least at the college level. But, no, I just don't want to give up too much. You already don't have a second round pick. What else are you going to give up? I say stay put, but I wouldn't be surprised and I wouldn't be against it. I would just stay put.
Would you give up a pick for next year?
Yes. Next year I would.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, next year I would.
I don't know that that's especially common unless you're like trading up, you know, top 10 and then you're giving up next year's first. Most of what you're doing if you're trading up is like, hey, you give up three of your picks to move up 20 spots or whatever it is. If John Schneider was listening, he'd go, it's far more complicated than that. But what I'm saying is I don't think it's often that you hear of future picks being dealt all the time and they don't have a ton of picks this year that I'd want to see them give up. But if there was a way to finagle a trade where you could give up something next year, I'd be willing to hear it because I am deeply concerned about the interior of that O-line.
Yeah,
deeply concerned.
I would entertain it. I feel like this year they're standing at the top of a mountain with a little snowball and they're just looking to push that thing off, right? And just have to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then next year you kind of just add a little bit to that. I think this year, every year is important, but I think because of the new head coach and all the change that's going on, it's so important just to get as many picks as you can this year and not make it too complicated. I think you can mess around with next year a little bit because I honestly feel like if you get the right pieces this year, if you get some production out of guys you're not expecting, if Boye continues to grow and do his thing, if Murphy hops in and looks good, you can find yourself contending for the division. And if you contend for this division, you're going to be in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So it's just taking the necessary steps, man, and being focused on this year and the mission for this year. I'm not saying go Los Angeles Rams to give up all your picks for 7 years, but I would entertain giving up picks from next year.
Yeah, I would as well. And when I look at this offensive line, I know that we can think about gems that you can find later, but the approach they took last year was, we want to take the player we fell in love with that we don't necessarily need, Devin Witherspoon.
Mm-hmm.
And the pieces that we need, offensive and defensive line, let's grab some guys on day three. Let's grab Anthony Bradford from the fourth round. Let's grab Cam Young. Let's get these guys later and see what they become. I don't know that you can keep taking that approach to your offensive line, especially when, if I look back at the pieces that have been most impactful for Seattle, I see a lot of impactful second rounders. Whether it's, I believe Justin Britt was a second rounder. Say what you will about Jermaine Ifedi, he was at least a four-year mm-hmm. starter. You traded up a second to get Dwayne Brown in here, who was technically a first rounder with Houston before he came here. He was your best offensive lineman the entirety of his time here. Damian Lewis, a third rounder, was one of your better offensive linemen for a while. Like, I'm trying to rack my mind to think of, like, who was, like, a late-round guy who was really, really impactful for you. And I'm sure there's a few in there. Maybe there's, like, a Phil Haynes, who was pretty solid for a while. But some of the pieces that I look at and go, wish you still had that guy. Or, like, you know, in hindsight, that guy was pretty solid. Those weren't deep into day three guys.
I would love to see the hit rate on offensive linemen later in the draft. I feel like that.
I mean, Kelsey's the most famous example for a reason.
Right. I feel like, I don't know, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I don't know for sure, but my gut is telling me that the further you get in the draft, the less successful offensive linemen are. We see it happen with running backs excel. We've seen receivers excel. We've seen defensive players excel. But for some reason, I feel like the gap is huge between elite offensive lineman, good offensive lineman, and then just the average offensive lineman in the NFL. I'm going to look that up.
I'm really curious about it. I mean, I'm sure, I know that there are guys. I'm looking at a list that has, like, the best all time. Some of these picks are, but it's not that you can't find those guys. And to your point, you can find them at other positions. You have found really good wide receivers and running backs as undrafted rookies with Jermaine Kearse, Doug Baldwin, Thomas Rawls, mm-hmm. even though it was only for a year for Rawls. But I found those guys.
I think what part of that is just
Carson in the seventh.
It's just harder to find big human beings.
Truly. I don't think it's complicated. Yeah, I think you're right.
I will walk down East Lake right now and not see one guy who I said, that's an old lineman body type.
Yeah.
I will see receivers, DBs, running backs, and linebackers all day.
All right. Well, let's go to the defensive side of things and talk about an actual defensive lineman we know is here already. Byron Murphy II, someone who covered his career at Texas. Chip Brown, he joins us next.